paramedic here from 2311 Racing. Game night's fun until someone spends 5 minutes lining up one shot. Chalk, breathe, re-chalk, still aiming. While they figure it out, I fire up Chumba Casino. I can spin anywhere, anytime, and there's always a new social casino game every week. Spins happen way faster than that shot. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Fourth and final hour. Darren Donick and Chase here on ESPN 102.5. The game on this Thursday afternoon. Sunny and 70 here in Middle Tennessee. Beautiful Thursday. Hope you're having a great day. Elliot Freeman joins us every Thursday at this time from Sportsnet. 31 Thoughts. Find his work there. Elliot, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing?
Hanging in there. How about you guys?
We're doing pretty well. It's a long walk, as you guys know. It's a really long walk, but we're making the best of it.
You're the perfect guy to weigh in on this because we got into this discussion the other day on the show. The Last Dance, you know, that's been airing on Sunday nights on ESPN.
Yep.
And then after this, episodes five and six on Sunday, Scott Van Pelt and SportsCenter came on afterwards, and Charles Barkley was the guest. And Charles Barkley said that in his lifetime, there's been no bigger sports stars than Michael Jordan and Tiger Woods, basically everything. Mm-hmm. You know, in their sport, their persona, just everywhere they went, you know, it was people were crazed. And it got us going down. We ended up talking about it for well over an hour on the show. We got a bunch of calls of who else would you put on that list where they had this gigantic persona and basically there were rock stars everywhere they went. And we were trying to, you know, weigh in on a guy like Wayne Gretzky. How would you go about trying to describe Wayne Gretzky in his prime? What was it like for the great one, wherever he went and whatever team he was on? What was it like?
Well, before I do him, I would say that Muhammad Ali would be the guy that I would put on that list because he was
definitely
such a global phenomenon, too.
Yes.
Muhammad Ali came to Toronto in 2001 or 2002, and it was still a huge deal. So, and that was, you know, 20 years after he'd last fought. So he would be the guy I'd name. You know, I didn't cover when Gretzky was at his apex, at least as a player in the mid-80s, I was still a teenager, so I didn't cover them. But I remember going to games, and it was a huge deal. You know, like, there would be people. It was one of the first times you really saw that when a player came to town, it wasn't just the sports media that was covering them. It was the news media. It was the entertainment media. How many people were pulling them in different directions to do different things? You know, around Toronto, could he do a commercial shoot here? Could he do something there? It was big. But, you know, the one thing that, you know, you say about Gretzky and people around hockey longer than I do is, how many teams are in the league if it's not for Gretzky?
Great point. We actually brought that up.
When he came into the NHL, it went to 21 teams. How many, like you, San Jose, Anaheim, that's Gretzky. You know, is Nashville because of Gretzky? I think you could make an argument.
I think Pete Weber brought that up yesterday on the show with us, that because of his move to L.A., how that paved the way, right, for other markets that you're bringing up. It was, I think he was going down the same road you are of it. It showed that you could be, you know, those markets could be cool. And look how big Gretzky built up the L.A. market, and Southern California market, where it wasn't viewed as a hockey market. And, you know, how that may have paved the way for a lot of markets like Nashville and Columbus and Tampa, and, you know, we know the list.
You see, the thing, and the interesting thing to me about it is now, and I'm thinking about this on my feet while you ask the question, and I'm thinking about it. So, you know, you talk about Tiger Woods, he made golf more popular, no question about it. Did he put golf anywhere it wasn't already?
It's a great point, because obviously when we started taking a bunch of calls and getting a lot of feedback, you start, you know, comprising a huge list. And, of course, we had people calling Arnold Palmer, you know, Jack Nicklaus. And to your point, those guys like that had already built the sport. I think then the argument for Tiger Woods is then he took it to, like, a different zip code.
Yes, he took it to a higher level. He made it he took it to a broader audience, and he made it more financially viable, I think. But did he take it anywhere in terms, like, you know, the NBA, Jordan, huge superstar. But most people credit Magic Johnson and Larry Bird for saving the league. They were just a little bit older than Jordan. They were, what, 5 years ahead of him?
Yeah.
Jordan's almost like the Tiger Woods, who took it to a new level. But Johnson and Bird were probably the guys who saved the league. Like, off the top of my head, and I'm sure, like, Tom Brady to me is probably as big a deal as it gets now. To LeBron James is probably as big a deal as it gets now. But those guys aren't necessarily going to put their league anywhere it isn't. I don't know how many guys are as responsible for maybe expansion, men or women, are as responsible for expansion as Gretzky is.
Yeah, that is a really, really good point. I think now that you've put it in those terms, you know, I almost feel like because somebody brought up Serena Williams, you know, not that women's tennis didn't exist, but I don't know, you had Chrissy Everett. I mean, there, yeah, gosh, you know.
She's probably like Tiger Woods in the sense that she took it to an audience.
She took it to, there you go.
Maybe excluded by it.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, okay. That's interesting. So how would you answer this, Elliot? Then who is today's rock? Who's the biggest rock star in hockey today? Wherever they go, people show up. Who is that guy today? How would you answer that?
Well, you know, I think there have been guys who fill arenas. You know, Crosby certainly does. I remember there was a time where Crosby and Ovechkin were in the league. That, you know, there, you didn't go to every city every year, right? And teams really complained about that. They would say, how can I sell my tickets when I'm telling my fans there might be a year you don't get to see Sidney Crosby and Alexander Ovechkin? And the league changed that for that reason. You know, Ovechkin's probably the closest thing to the rock star in the way he carries himself. As you know, Crosby's understated. He likes it that way. Ovechkin is demonstrative. You know, you see him with the different colored visor and the exuberance he uses on the ice. He's probably closest to that. Now, I will say, I think this younger generation is scratching the surface about where it's going to go. I mean, McDavid, he sells tickets. Everywhere he goes, people want to see that guy play. But I think Matthews has a chance to be that guy too, absolutely. He's a scorer. He's an incredible scorer. And I think he started to put himself out there with some of the fashion he does with his mustache. He loves people ripping, like, the greasiness of his mustache and stuff. I think he's got an edge to that personality. Plus, he's got, you know, the unique background, a guy from Arizona too. So I think that, you know, I think this young generation has a chance. We're sort of taking the handcuffs off the personality now. I think these guys have a chance to really take it to another level in terms of what their personalities are allowed to do. And I think Matthews in particular has a chance to really be at the forefront of that because he's a great player. He's going to be one of the best players. And he's got that little smirk that he kind of likes to be out there. Like, I got to tell you, like, Roman Josi, you know, the way he carries himself, the way he likes to look, I think but you can't force a guy's personality, right? He likes to be understated. PK was, like, I think if Roman had a bit more of, like, PK's personality, I think he could have been a guy who could do that. Now, obviously, PK is a guy who's completely unafraid, and he's taken hockey to places where it hasn't gone.
Talking to Elliot Friedman from Sportsnet.ca. He's got the 31 thoughts out right now. And so, Elliot, let's hit you with a couple of thoughts that you had in there. Let's start with your sense right now. Your gut feeling is 24 teams if and when the league resumes. Tell us why.
I just think that there's a couple of reasons. There's three. Number one is safety. If you've been following, if you follow any league right now, the stories are all the same, right? You know, the NFL, you guys know the Titans, they're going to be releasing their schedule tonight. They're having a big show. But, you know, I saw stories today that a lot of this could be predicated on testing. In the NBA, they're concerned about how many of these individual team facilities they can open. And Mark Cuban, the owner of the Mavericks, he said yesterday on a podcast, I'm not opening ours because I'm not convinced we can keep everybody safe and the testing is available. So I think that it's going to, and if you've watched any of those highlights of the Korean Baseball League, you know, everybody who's going in, they have to have the swab and the temperature test. You know, are we going to be ready for that? So I think until all of this is available, and the leagues are very concerned about PR of them jumping to the front of the line, not only for testing, but for the PPEs, the proper equipment, the masks, the gloves, all of that. So I think it's not going to happen until these questions are answered, these supply questions are answered, and that isn't a short-term thing. So that's number one. And I think because of that, there's the danger of time. You don't have a long runway here. You know, you're talking about starting next year, December, January, so let's work backwards. The league and the players have agreed that they need between 45 and 55 days between the Stanley Cup and the start of next season. So you're at a month and a half, 2 months. So if you're waiting for a little while till all this testing's ready, and then you've got to have a month and a half off to 2 months before you can start the next year, you know, the calendar is not your friend. And I think the third thing, guys, is I think there's a number of players on teams that aren't going to make the playoffs, that have no chance to make the playoffs, who've kind of said they don't want a part of it. And some of them have said it publicly. Drew Doughty was one. Others have said it privately. It's out there. People are aware of it. And I think they're kind of I did have one manager say to me, if you're having a race to the playoffs and there's two divisions, not yours, because there's still seven teams that could make the playoffs there, but if there's a couple divisions where, you know, you've got three teams that are playing key players not there, is it fair competitively? So, again, it's my opinion. I can't say for sure it's going to happen, but I think we're looking more and more like a 2014 playoff as opposed to a resumption of the regular season.
You bring up so many great practical questions in this. Like, we're watching the baseball, and you actually can see players wearing masks. They're playing catch. They're out in the field. They're wearing masks. They're up at the plate. You know, hockey, you're going so hardcore, those hard bursts at full throttle. I can't imagine a player could play with any kind of mask on. Would that be true? And what about the officials? You bring up them as well.
Well, I just wondering, like someone said to me, like, are they going to have to wear masks? I don't think anyone knows the answer to the question, but I think it's at least possible. Like, to me, guys, like I'm also wondering about the coaches. Like, your guy, John Hines, he's younger. So, you know, I don't know if you worry about him as much, but I counted. I think there's 12 coaches above age 55, 5 above 60. And there's some pretty prominent assistant coaches who are 16 above too. I know it's something they've kind of said, you know, what about this? And I don't know if they have an answer yet. They'll eventually go to their doctors and say, or their medical leaders and say, what do you think? But I think it's a big question. You know, are you worried about the health of some of your people, like executives too? There's executives who are even older than that. So I think that people are kind of saying, yes, we'd like to play, and I think we hope to play, but there's a lot of practical considerations here that we don't know the answer to yet, and we'd like to have the answer quickly, but we might not necessarily have it. So I think a lot of people are really unsure.
There were many games, Elliot, here that we can reference back to that Peter Laviolette thinking he didn't like a call. He should maybe wear a mask moving forward, for sure.
That probably would have helped him out. That way.
Yeah, when he takes his gum out, he should put on a mask if he was on the bench.
Yeah, right. Peter wasn't always very happy with the referees, I can tell you that much. You guys know that better than me.
Peter wasn't always happy with certain things.
Elliot, this may be more interesting to you and I, who potentially could be involved directly in how the television broadcast is disseminated, if and when they get going here. But you have some extensive discussions with the Sportsnet people on the different options there. What's the simplest way to describe that for our listeners?
Well, the simplest way to describe it is my boss didn't call me today, so he was not happy with the article. That's a good thing.
Uh-oh.
basically... I think I get a lot of tweets from fans or DMs from fans on Twitter asking, you know, what's this going to look like? And so I just said, you know what, I can ask them. And, you know, I think we're looking at, okay, we're almost 99%, if not 100% sure there's going to be no fans. So where can you put cameras in places that can give people a unique angle? You know, where can we go that can show people a different level of the game? And there's this thing called the spider cam, and if you're a football fan, you see it in particular. It basically goes right above the field, and it goes on a cable up and down. It moves, so you can sort of see the action as it's unfolding live at more of a right, basically right on top or right behind the play. And, you know, one of the reasons they can't use it in the NHL is because the scoreboard is too low. And now with no fans, you can probably raise the scoreboard and try that. And they're discussing that. They're looking at all sorts of different angles about where they could put cameras. They're talking about sound. The arena is going to be empty. So what do we do? And, you know, he mentioned that the league and the players will discuss how much of that audio do you want to bring in the house. I'm sure there's things that are going to be said on the ice that nobody wants people to hear. And also, you know, someone had told me that it had been discussed about bringing hiring a DJ, bringing them into the arena and to play music even while the game is going on to create an atmosphere. And that's something that's been discussed. And I think the other thing, and I know for you guys in particular, because you guys work the broadcast, you know, will we be there? And I think there is a chance that small crews can be there, but I think it's also a chance that a feed gets sent to all of the different TV stations that broadcast the games, and you do it from the studio, and you put your National Predator broadcast look on it. And, you know, you guys host it from your studio, and you call it from your studio, and you put your graphics package on it so it looks the same to your fan base, though it's not there. I think all of that stuff is possible, but what it says to me is they're looking at all sorts of different ways. Instead of looking at about what we don't have, look at it as what we're given the opportunity to do. And I think they are – I know I was told they're having multiple conversations about how to make that work.
We're talking to Elliot Friedman from Sportsnet. So I've been – something that I've been thinking about a lot lately, and I've been waiting all week to ask you this – earlier today, we talked to Ryan McGee from ESPN, covers college football, also a NASCAR fan, covers NASCAR. And as you know, or may know, Elliot, NASCAR announced last week they're going to come back on May 17th. And so I've been curious of how much they have talked to other leagues, how, you know, if other leagues have reached out to them. And I know there have been conversations. My whole point with this is, do we believe that this situation might make the leagues realize they should talk more? They should bounce ideas off of each other, because I don't really know how much they do or have up until this point. So what are your thoughts? Do you feel like that this is going to open the lines of communication between the major sports in Canada and America and all over a little bit more since they've had to do it through this?
I would think so. I would think the answer to that question is yes. because it's pretty obvious now they're sharing a ton of information, and the smart thing is never to go backwards, right? Like I think that the biggest issue is time. If you're a commissioner or you're a major executive in these leagues, you always seem to be busy with something, right? Like, is there ever a quiet minute? And that limits, you know, how much you can really do. But I think it's a great question, and I wouldn't be surprised if all of these leagues start sharing best practices with each other.
Yeah, because I just feel like that could make sports as a whole even better of just, hey, this has worked for us, you know, especially with the draft. And we talked to David Poyle last week about it, and he said, of course he was paying attention to the draft that the NFL did, because he feels like they could be doing some of the same things. And the fact that you have, like, the NFL is sitting there watching what everybody else is going to do because their season doesn't start until the fall, that gives them a gauge, you know, where baseball is having to watch Korean baseball to have a gauge of, okay, this is something that we can build upon. I feel like that helps everybody and makes it all better.
Well, I think that, and I think here too, and I agree with you, and I think there's a good chance here the MLB is going to be first. It's not a guarantee, but I think everybody's kind of expecting that. They're outdoors, which gives them an advantage. You've seen all these reports the last couple of days that a return to play protocol is going to be proposed from the league to the players sometime in the next little while. You know, the NHL and the NBA, they're not close to that. So I do think everybody's going to be watching baseball to see how it works, what they do that goes well, and what they do that doesn't go well. So, yes, I certainly agree with that. Did you guys ask David, will he have a Mike Vrabel home setup if the NHL draft happens next month?
That didn't come up, but it's a fair question.
Oh, my God. You guys are so wimpy. You should have asked him that.
He did admit that he watched Tiger King, which he said he regretted
really?
It.
Really?
Yes, that surprised us, and he did say he regretted it.
He probably loved it. He's just telling me.
Like, honestly, of a list putting together, you know, people that have watched Tiger King, I probably would have had David Poyle at the bottom of the list. So he did admit that. Let's end with this, Elliot. I got a chance Tuesday night to do about a 30-minute interview with Jordan Tutu on Facebook Live. And we know what he was like in this market, what he meant to this market, especially at the time in this fan base. He was beloved, but you know, been covering the sport a long time. What was the sentiment around the league about a guy like Jordan Tutu back then?
Well, I think when he played, you know, I think there's two ways. There were two ways to look at the Jordan Tutu. I think one was the overall life way, and then one was the way he played way. And then when he retired or was getting to the end, everybody went back to the life way. Like, you know, there's guys who, when they play, when they're on your team, you love them, and when they're not on your team, you hate them.
Yeah.
And Jordan was kind of that guy. Like, the guys who played with him loved him, and the guys who played against him, even if they liked him when they weren't on the ice, they hated him during the games.
Yeah.
But I think if you look at the overall life way, you know, when you come from where Jordan Tutu comes from, unfortunately, the odds are against you. You know, it's a big challenge. And he beat it. And it wasn't an easy line. There were challenges there. You know, family challenges, his own challenges in terms of alcohol. And everything, it wasn't easy, but he got through it. And, you know, when he retired, there were lots of stories about children from Indigenous places in Canada who said, like, I saw what that guy did, and I'm going to follow it. And I think now that he's retired, everybody looks at the positives. Look at what this guy did. Look what this guy accomplished. Look at what this guy – nobody thinks anything less of him, that he had challenges along the way because he found a way to get through them. So everybody I know who speaks about Jordan Tutu speaks very respectfully of him. And I think everybody recognizes that he beat the odds, and he's respected because of that.
9-plus years sober. It's a fantastic story. He told me that I asked him to take me back to the day when David Poyle and, you know, Barry Trotz called him in for a meeting, and it was fascinating. He said that, you know, he woke up, like a lot of days, hungover from partying all night, and he gets the call from David Poile, we need to see you in the office. And he said he knew right then, he knew what that was about. And he knew that, he said, I already had those meetings with him, so he knew that this was kind of, this was it. And he broke down and just said, I got to get fixed, or I'm going to be out of the league, or I'm going to be dead. And mm-hmm. he went into that meeting and walked right in and said he just started, you know, he lost it, started crying and said, I need help. And so it's a fascinating story, really, to his journey to where he is today. And like I said, 9+ years sober. It's fantastic considering, like you said, where he grew up and none of it, and mm-hmm. you know, everything surrounding, and his brother committing suicide, and just how open he is on talking about all of that.
Well, I think you realize that when you go through things, you're not alone. Like, you don't have to be an open book about your challenges. But everybody with half a brain understands that there are challenges and we all go through them. They may not be the same challenges, but nobody goes through life unscathed. So everybody gets that, and nobody thinks less of you of it, nobody who's smart anyway. And I think he also knows that, you know, when he tells young people that you have this, 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 and this, no matter what your goal is, whether it's to be an athlete or something else, you can achieve your goal if you have the will to try to power over a hurdle, or even maybe through a hurdle that comes up your way. It's a great message. And I think everybody loves to see him delivering it.
Yeah. Kind of like your message on Thursdays with us. We really appreciate it. You and the family continue to be safe, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right, guys. Have a great weekend, okay?
Yep, you do the same. Elliot Freeman from Sportsnet. Go read his latest edition of 31 Thoughts. Good stuff. We'll hear from a little bit from Philip Forsberg on the other side of Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.